Hey everyone, welcome to the Motion Church Weekly Podcast. On this podcast, we share some thoughts from our weekly gatherings as home churches, as well as our messages from when we all get together. It's our desire to help people become fully devoted followers of Jesus, and we hope that this podcast encourages you to walk in that way. Thanks again for joining us, and enjoy this episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Motion Church Weekly Podcast. It's Caleb and Shannon here with you again. And this week we are looking at John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11. We started off chapter 2 this past weekend with our church. And, man, it was awesome. Shannon's going to give us a lot of stuff that we looked at together. And we hope it's a blessing to you today. So, Shannon, give it to us, brother.
Yeah, it was a great thing to look at this portion of John. And chapter 2 really begins a cool part of his gospel because, as we mentioned before, he mentions later on in his gospel, he gives his purpose, which he says the things that he wrote, verse 31 there in chapter 20, he says, but these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. And so what John uses to fulfill that purpose, to show that Jesus is the Son of God, the Messiah, is he's going to show seven of his miracles that he did. Now, he did a bunch, but he's going to focus in on seven of them, and each one of these is going to really get to the heart of some type of institution or aspect of the life of Israel in their connection with God, and he's going to use it as a way to contrast their traditional view and what God intended with it. So he's basically going to take their view of who they are as God's people and flip it upside down. And so this is the first one of those. And it's really cool that he uses a wedding as the first miracle that he's going to show, because weddings and marriage are significant in Scripture. We see marriage being instituted right there at the very first day when God created Adam and Eve. That's the whole part, right? The man shall leave his mother and father and cleave to his wife, and they'll become one flesh. That was marriage. That was instituting that important covenant. And then as we get enhanced later on from the Apostle Paul, who says, hey, guess what? This marriage relationship, it actually is a picture of the relationship between the church and Jesus Christ. So our marriage relationships are to be a reflection of the relationship of God's people with him. And so, I mean, what an awesome thing to kick off his miracles with is the wedding and the marriage feast. And so they get invited to this wedding here, and we see his mom, Mary, kind of getting involved in events. So she may have been one that was invited to the wedding. She may have been connected with the family members involved. We don't know exactly, but she does, you know, kind of tell the servants what to do, and there's a problem at the wedding. And so she gets herself inserted into it. So we don't know exactly how they got invited to this wedding, but they were invited to this wedding. And Jewish weddings at the time usually went on for a 7-day period that finalized the whole process. And so they're here at this wedding, and all of a sudden there's a problem, and the wedding party runs out of wine. And so Mary comes up to Jesus, is like, hey, they're out of wine. And that's where we get that interesting statement when you read it. You know, verse 3 says, when they ran out of wine, the mother of Jesus said to him, they have no wine. And Jesus said to her, woman, what does this have to do with me? My hour has not yet come. You know, we read it in our Western eyes, 21st century Western eyes, and we're like, whoa, what in the world is Jesus doing here? Yeah. But back then, that was a common phrase. It was a common way to politely rebuke a certain situation. And so we can kind of gather that Mary was kind of pushing the envelope a little bit, you know, knowing what the angel said about her son, that was, you know, was given to her through the Holy Spirit, and what he would accomplish. She's kind of like, ooh, here's an opportunity for you to start showing the world who you are. And so he's got to lightly correct her by saying, listen, my hour has not come for that. And John uses that phrase, his hour, to refer to the cross and the resurrection. And so he's saying, nope, it's not time yet. So they have an issue. They're out of wine. What are they going to do? So Jesus steps into the situation. And John tells us that at this wedding feast, there were 6 stone jars there for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. And Jesus said to the servants, fill the jars with water. And they filled them up to the brim. And so listen, this is a lot of water. This isn't just like a few cups here. These are big stone jars that the servants had to take multiple trips to fill. And so he has the servants fill it with water. Once they filled those purification jars with water, he has them dip the serving pitchers into them. And as they go to serve the master of the ceremony, it's this great, awesome, fantastic wine. And that is a really significant aspect of that. And so I wanted to talk a little bit about the importance of the wine in this thing. And I'm not going to go into it really in depth. We talked a bit about a bit of it on Saturday, and maybe we'll save another podcast on this particular subject. But the fact of the matter is what they were drinking there at this wedding feast was wine, what we would think of as wine. It wasn't just grape juice. That biblical or the Greek word there used for wine, when it's talking about just grape juice, it's very specific in the context of the passage. And we can see here that it's not. So they are drinking wine. I know that maybe caused a little bit of a controversy, but like I said, we'll talk about that in maybe another podcast. But one of the things about wine and Israel is you read through the Old Testament, you read through the prophets, and especially when they're talking about when God is going to make all things new. And it's talked about God's abundance and his blessing and all of that. And wine is talked about in that context. And so wine is a symbol of God's abundance for his people. And so here you have this sign, this great wedding feast. God's people are gathered. All of a sudden there is a famine. The wine ran out. So God is going to provide in a miraculous way God's abundance, and not just any old wine, right? It says in verse 8, and he said to them, now draw some out and take to the master of the feast. So they took it. And when the master of the feast tasted the water now become wine and did not know where it came from, though the servants had drawn the water new, the master of the feast called the bridegroom and said to him, everyone serves the good wine first. And when people have drunk freely, then the poor wine, but you have kept the good wine until now. And so not only does Jesus provide this miraculous wine, but he is providing this great, this good wine. It's a good quality wine to where the master of the ceremony is like, wow, this is unbelievable. And it kind of reflects the whole concept throughout the New Testament of the last shall be first and the first shall be last. And at the end of it all, God's going to provide that great abundance. But it's also a preview of what the wine is going to represent in the new covenant. And we're going to get a picture of that as we look at the Last Supper in the weeks and months to come, where Jesus is gathered with his disciples and he has the cup. And he said, this is my blood, the new covenant. And through that is where their sins will be washed and they will receive the forgiveness of sins. And so it's a preview into what Jesus is ultimately going to do when his hour does come. So it's really cool. A lot of symbolic stuff happening here. And the wine is coming out of the purification jars. And these jars were there to be used for basically ritual cleansing, when you needed to be clean, when you were preparing for meals, if you had transgressed the law in a certain way and you offered your offerings and whatnot, you'd have to purify yourself. And so that's what these jars were for. And so it's almost like a picture of Jesus taking the law, the old letter of the law, and transforming it into something new. And so we get a picture of the transformation from the Old Testament and the law into the New Testament, the new covenant, through the blood of Christ and through grace. And so, you know, a lot of cool imagery, and ultimately the source of all transformation is Jesus Christ himself, and him working that miracle and bringing that great symbol of abundance and saving the wedding feast from utter disaster, and all through this miraculous means. And the thing I kind of wanted to end with is the servants, because I think a lot of times the servants don't get talked a lot about. And it didn't even really hit me at first, and we didn't get a chance to really go into the servants a bit more on Saturday. And the thing that really strikes you about the servants is, here you have a guy, we don't even know if the servants know Jesus. You know, if somehow there was a family connection, then I'm sure they knew of him. But at this time, really, what people know of Jesus, other than maybe those that were by John the Baptist when he was baptized at the River Jordan, or his disciples, or his mom, all most people in the community know of him, is he's the son of Joseph. He's the carpenter. And so here's these servants, and Jesus comes up, and he's telling them, go fill the purification jars. And so instantly, they've got to be like, why are we filling the purification jars? We've got a wedding going on. You know, what's happening here? We've never filled these purification jars in the middle of a wedding feast before. And so he says, fill it up. And do they question him?
No,
they don't question him. They just, okay. Mary said, listen to him. He said, fill up the purification jars. All right, let's see what's going to happen here. Maybe he's going to have everybody, you know, cleanse themselves, whatnot, before whatever. So anyways, so now they go. They're going to have to take multiple trips to the well, fill these stone jars. They get them filled, and now he's going to tell them to take the pitcher that they're going to serve the or the drink out of. They're not going to go to the drinking water to fill it. They're going to get the water right from the purification jar. You did not, in that day and age, as a Jew, you did not drink from the purification jar. And so he has them fill the purification jar and take it to the master of the ceremonies. Did they argue with Jesus? Did they point out, Jesus, we don't, you know, they obeyed. They simply followed. And as a result, look at this cool statement. The master of the ceremony says, everyone serves the good wine first. And when people have drunk freely, then the poor wine, but you have kept the good wine until now. This is the first sign. Oh, I'm sorry. It's further up where it says, nine. When the master of the feast tasted the water, now become wine, did not know where it came from. Look what John says, though the servants who had drawn the water knew. Mm-hmm. So really the only ones in the know were the servants, Mary, the disciples, and Jesus.
Yeah.
So by their simple obedience, they were able to play a part in God's miraculous, you know, service through Christ. Mm-hmm. And you know, got to do hand-to-hand work with the Messiah himself by simply obeying, even when they didn't fully understand what Jesus was getting at. And that's the power of this awesome, awesome miracle. So much imagery, so much symbolicness to it, and just some good stuff.
Yeah. Oh man, I think another cool part there is at the end, after John says this is the first of his signs that Jesus did, and it manifested his glory, showed forth his glory. But like you said, it was really just for those few people. And then it says, and his disciples believed in him. So each one of these things that Jesus does just keeps cementing this belief for the disciples of church. Man, I love what you said, the simple obedience. It was allowed them to take part in this awesome miracle. And how applicable is that for us? Simple obedience to what God says in his word. And we can have a part in bringing Jesus and his glory to other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think about how many opportunities I think I've lost over the years only because I was wanting to be too hard-headed instead of just simply obeying.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. So, yeah, it's definitely some hard-hitting stuff. And, man, we hope this podcast is a blessing to you. And if you want to get some more information about how we're going through this, head over to our website and shoot us a message there. You can get in contact with us there. And just want to thank you for listening to the podcast this week. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll be back with you next week. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Motion Church Weekly. As always, head over to our website at motionchurch.life or follow us on social media to keep up with the latest from Motion Church. We hope you have a great week.